All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Mom's back. Yes. Mom's back in full effect, you guys. I should have been recording before we started recording. You know, getting boomers onto technology is, it's horrible in person, but it's worse when you're on the phone.
And when you're on a timeline and you're in a time crunch, and I just
and every moment is precious.
Like crying.
Okay, well, we're not going to cry.
No, I'm not.
The therapist will not be crying on this podcast.
The only thing I ever cry about lately is technology.
This is a podcast where we make the therapists cry.
Cry, right? We therapists are real people.
Yeah, because therapists have feelings too.
Yes, right.
Oh my God.
Yes.
But we're here and we're going to talk about, you've been sober for 1 year, not you, Mom. I mean, the listener. Mom's been sober for over a year.
Yes.
For over 2 years.
No, it'll be 2 years in August. So about a year and a half.
Yeah. Year and a half. Okay. You've been sober for 1 year. Now what? Now what? Ugh. It's like, yay, the countdown, 365 days. Oh my God, I did it. Wait.
Yeah. Now what?
Now what? Now do I just keep doing it? What does that mean? And that doesn't sound fun. Yeah.
Yeah, the pink cloud is gone and the novelty has worn off, perhaps. I mean, we do hear a lot of women that are beyond the 1 year mark that are, they're still just reveling in how great it is. So it's not like it's a cliff we drop off.
Totally. And I don't think I had a pink cloud. Anytime I hear about that, I'm like, that never resonates with me, because I think in my first year, I was so focused on just like gathering information and digging into my past and stuff that it felt more like work. And that's why I think I compare that first year of sobriety to that first mile.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And I had the worst run this morning.
Did you? But you kept running.
Kind of. I did a progressive run with Bex on Peloton. And progressive runs suck. And you go into them just knowing that they're going to suck, because it's constant running with negative splits, right? Which is the hardest kind of running.
Right. Faster and faster.
It's horrible. And it was horrible. And it made me think about this, because I always say that first mile is like the first year, because, I mean, and everything in my body and in my mind is telling me no. This was a horrible idea. This is the worst idea you've ever had in your entire life. You need to stop what you're doing. What are you doing? There are so many things you could be doing right now instead of this. Mm-hmm. And I had all of these thoughts this morning, and I'm just watching the feet. What's like the 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4 leading up to a mile? Oh. Tenths of a mile.
Yeah, tenths of a mile. Yeah. Oh, no, I was told there would be no math.
I know. So, yes. And I know that about myself, that I had to, with every run, like the first mile is a lie for me. It's a big liar, right? And I equate that to sobriety, and especially my journey in that. And I say that about the 30 days, 30-day challenges. Like, you can't really judge sobriety on just that
early part.
Yeah, the early part. And so then that got me thinking about the second mile, right? And so then the second mile, which is what you might be entering into if you maybe you did dry January and you're keeping going and you're still going. And sometimes that second mile could be, after 30 days. Sometimes it's not until your second year, wherever you want to apply this. You do kind of settle in, or I do. I settle into my run, but it's still kind of
adjusting.
Yes. And I can like drift off and I can start to daydream, which is good. And then my body can remind me of things. And then I'm like, oh, right, I'm doing this and it's hard. Okay. And then so it's kind of it's like an ebb and a flow of when it's hard and when it's easy and when it's hard and when it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like life.
Totally. And I think that I don't know. I just kept thinking about, this is kind of what it is. And when you're more settled into sobriety, is it boring or is it less chaotic? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, as we hear women talk when they're into their second year, I have heard some concerns that now that they're fully in it, that they're going to let their guard down and sort of go back. And I think that's a smart thing to pay attention to, because the farther away we get from the chaos and the shitty feelings, the more that sort of recedes enough that we might not remember really what it did cost us or how bad it was.
And so it's easier to romanticize, especially when we have the media and
we never escape that.
Yeah, everything around us telling us to drink alcohol and that it will help.
Yes.
And that's a lie.
Right. So there can be that period where we might start like, well, was it that bad? Or And so I think being a little vigilant as you cross that, I think it is the milestone too. Like, okay, there, I've done a year. And then to just like, okay, maybe this is a really good time to remind myself of why I did this to begin with. And
yes. And to have people, I do think that this is where community is key.
Oh, so true.
I think that especially when you're going into something with a goal of it being a year, right? If you're listening to this and like maybe you did dry January last year and you were like, I'm going to do no alcohol 23 or what? Alcohol free 23. That sounds better.
Yeah. I know there's a rhyme in there somewhere.
it's got to be there. And you did it, right? And this is kind of like what we talk about for a big event. Like you're talking yourself through it. You're focused on it. And you're like, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm very clear on my goal. And you reach your goal and then your guard is down. And then it's easier to let alcohol in, right?
Yes.
But you could also be at the point where you went through a year, you know, right? You know, okay, I don't want alcohol. I don't want to let alcohol back in. But having a community around you where it's just a good touch base, whether that's a couple of times a week, once a week, where you know you're gonna go meet with your people, whether that's on Zoom, maybe it's in the cafe, and mm-hmm. you are going to not only hear other people's stories of 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and then you go, oh, okay, I see there's some light and this keeps going. You're also going to hear from people in that first 30 days, and you are going to be that wise voice saying, oh, I know, I was there. And that's such a good way to fortify your decision.
Yes, and I always talk about the one-room schoolhouse effect when we're all at different levels and different points in our sobriety to
like
be able
Montessori.
To like, yes, like Montessori or one-room schoolhouse in a log cabin. I am not old enough to have gone to.
Mom, I know. I was like, you didn't. Your schoolhouse had two rooms. Your schoolhouse.
Right. But yeah, that we learn. And I always say, too, that if you want to learn something, you teach it. Mm-hmm. And so the more I teach others, the more it's fortifying and reinforcing it for me. So the 1 year period I think really is, it can be a watershed moment. Like it can firm us up. So like now I'm on autopilot and we can talk about that too, or it can be that sort of, oh, I almost have to recommit to this because I may have forgotten what it was like that made me come to this decision in the first place.
Yes. I think a recommitment and maybe a you re-up, you're going to renew your sobriety for another year or a lifetime. I suggest a lifetime. It's not scary, and it gets less scarier to think about a lifetime of sobriety as you go through it. I think one thing that might happen is, you know, in that first year, there's all the sober first and you're just kind of like, what the hell's going on? You know, you don't know what the hell's going on and you've never, it's first sober wedding, vacation, holidays, fights, witching hour, just everything is so new and you're kind of just stumbling toward it that you might not, and you probably didn't have really even the wherewithal to deal with any of the other stuff that comes up in sobriety, right? Because you're just kind of figuring out how to be sober. And I think the second year can bring with it like an opportunity and maybe even more something more forceful than an opportunity, like a necessity of the shit, why you drank. And I know that childhood comes up. And all of the stuff that's underneath that you didn't get to yet in that first year can come up in that second year.
It makes me think of the subtitle to Blackout, that book, Remembering the Things I Drank to Forget.
Ooh. We'll link that in the show notes by Sarah Heppala.
That's such a good book. And but yeah, the idea that we are peeling away layers and initially our sobriety can just be focused on don't drink. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to go to this party and not drink. I'm going to go to this wet. And so there's the don't drink focus, but then there's all the other stuff that comes up. And as you say, that, you know, all the feelings that maybe were numbed by drinking or ignored. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there are things in our life that we just put up with because, well, if I have a few glasses of wine in the evening, then I can just not worry about it. So it may create a necessity to look at our life and say, I think I need a boundary here, or I think I need a change, or I think I need a demand, or whatever it is. Yes. So that then, the alcohol's gone. And so now you're left with all of this stuff. And of course, we hear a lot of women in our groups that are engaging in their own therapy as a result of being sober and all the maybe trauma or just negative emotion that comes up that we've been ignoring.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that that can catch you off guard sometimes because, you know, especially those people like myself who glamorize sobriety because, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think sobriety is necessarily glamorous, but it sure as hell is more glamorous than alcohol. And they get to glamorize that, you guys. So I get to glamorize sobriety.
Right, right.
And also, this isn't like, this could happen at 9 months. This could happen. I think this happens once you kind of get your feet under you in sobriety, whenever that is. And mm-hmm. that's different for everybody. But if it's generally around that year, it could catch you off guard because you think, hold on. Oh my God. This feels hard.
Why do I feel shitty?
This sucks. Like, hold on. Now I'm sad all the time. I still can't sleep because I'm worried about the fight I had with my husband, or I'm worried about my husband's drinking, or I'm worried about my dad, and now I'm dealing with all of these feelings that are coming up from childhood. Like, I'm 43. Mm-hmm. Why should I deal with childhood? That's stupid, you know? Mm-hmm. All of this stuff. And it's so easy to slip into the fallacy that if alcohol were in the picture, things would be easier / better / more manageable / all of these things, right?
Right, right.
And that is a lie. That's a lie. Yes. So here's the thing. You take alcohol out of the equation, right? And you're left with all of the things that were there, that were at play, that were at work, that were part of your foundation, that were a huge part of why you act the way you do and make choices the way you do and decide things the way you do and parent the way you do and all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And so you take alcohol out of the equation and now you're left with those things, right?
Right.
And that could feel like a heavy lift. But putting alcohol back into the equation, those things are still there and they're still at work. And they're still at play. You're just not now making eye contact with the scary monster under the bed, mm-hmm. right? But it's still there.
You know, that makes me think of when I first went into more deep therapy, and I was in it for a few years, I was thinking a lot about things that operate on us that we have no idea. Mm. So we behave in certain ways that we don't really know what makes us behave in those ways. And we may not even be analyzing it or thinking about it, but it's still operating on us. And that's sort of like the unexamined life is not worth living. The idea that this stuff is making me behave in certain ways, whether I recognize it or not. And if I don't recognize it, I have no ability to manage it, to change it. And so if I'm numbing out because of alcohol, or if I'm not looking deeply at why do I have this pattern of behavior? Mm-hmm. Why do all of my relationships sort of stack up in the same way?
Yeah. Who's the common denominator?
Yeah, right. Well, I had a client who said what her friend used to say to her, who was at the scene of every accident?
Right. Oh, right. And you guys, it's way easier to change ourselves than to change somebody else. That's the good news. Anytime Russell and I have like an argument or something, I'm always like, okay, yeah, I see where I screwed up because that – and that's kind of a relief to me. It's like, oh, okay, I got this. Like, I understand I can change that. But if it was just him, you know, like, whatever, that's
– yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, because then you're just a victim of somebody else's behavior. But if you can say, oh, I see where I made that, where I went left when you went right, I can see that.
Yeah.
And then the idea that if we, and we've talked about this a lot, but if we started drinking when we're in those adolescent years and we didn't learn how to manage our emotions, we didn't know who we were, talk about a heavy lift. And we can look at it like, oh, I don't know how to do any of this, and be daunted by it, or we can be excited by the prospect of I get to discover.
Or both, right? It's probably both.
Yeah, it is both. You're right.
It's both. And depending on the day and how much sleep you got and how the kids are acting and what's going on, it's both. And I think if you're listening to this, I can't think of anyone in our group or any – I don't know. I just don't know if I know any women who are like, no, I totally grew up – my parents totally taught me the language of feeling and and how to be in touch with my emotions and how I felt and what I needed. And they provided it. And it was an open conversation. And it was just not that in the 70s, 80s, 90s. It was just not that.
Right. There's a book called The Drama of the Gifted Child. Mm. It is by Alice Miller. You know, it's all about this underlying stuff. It's a book that's been around for 100 years. I don't know. Long, it's old.
100 years.
But that's one of the things that she says initially in the book is, even if you grew up in a family that was loving and that you feel like you had a great childhood growing up, there's still some fucked up stuff that we... She doesn't say it exactly like that in the book, but there's stuff that we take with us that in some ways is dysfunctional in our adult relationships.
Right.
And so you don't have to say, you know, I had a terrible traumatic childhood in order to say, man, I carried some things with me that have not served me well.
Right. And those things are probably rearing their head in that second year of sobriety. And that's when you know, it's so understandable that maybe our first instinct is to run and be like, ugh, no, that's too much. That's too hard. Too shameful. We don't do that anymore, though. And so if that's your first instinct, that's fine. That's your reaction. What's your response? And it's going to be, okay, there's stuff here. I have stuff. I am no longer going to turn to a highly addictive substance to numb out how I feel about the stuff. I'm going to, for the good of my relationships and my mental health and my physical health and everything, I'm going to make eye contact with it. And I'm and I do that through therapy and through community, through like a heaping dose of compassion for myself. And but that takes a lot of work.
Work and energy. And that does make me think also, I like the way you say, I have eye contact with it, because let's just look at it, right?
Right.
I do think we have to make room for, it doesn't have to be a grind all the time. We don't have to be deep and heavy into it all the time.
No.
And like you often say, we still do need to check out. We do need to numb.
We need to escape.
Totally.
And it's not, we're blinking, and it might be a staring contest for a little bit, but I'll lose and then I'll walk away for, you can't. You can't just sit in. I mean, I can't. And if
we were called on to do that, then there'd be no upside to just being sober, because it would just be a grind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to make sure people understand that we're not saying, now you're sober. You got to just look at all your shit all the time.
Right. It's just going to be a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, which is the fallacy. The fallacy is assuming that if alcohol was in the equation, that it wouldn't be a struggle. Right.
Right.
And
right.
It's hard in a different way, but it's not always hard. And it is so much brighter. It's so much brighter than it's the sliding door thing, right? I always, you know, everything comes back to the 90s.
The Gwyneth.
And everything comes back to Gwyneth. It just does. Yes. Hate me. I know. Hate Gwyneth.
You've always loved Gwyneth.
I have loved Gwyneth since 1994 when she was in Seven.
But also and recognizing that as we learn more, then we change how we do relationships or whatever, or how we do self-care. And so it gets easier and easier too. So it's not like, it's like learning a new language. It's not always uncomfortable or difficult. It gets easier as you get more proficient.
Yeah, you're going to learn those correlative conjunctions. Even though they're a bitch.
Right.
Yes, the tools that you learn, right, to help you through this time of exploration into your past and how it's forming your present and all of that, the tools that you use to do that actually help. They like actually nourish you. And even the tools you use to escape, like the tools that I use to escape today, like dancing, like music, like running, like showers, like, you know, water, writing, listening to Watch What Crappens, like those actually, they nourish me and they nourish my body and they're good for me.
You forgot to mention naps. That's such a big one.
Naps. A 2 o'clock nap.
Especially early on.
I think even, I mean, I'm just pro nap all the time. I think a nap is probably the most productive thing you can do.
Me too.
And in the first year of sobriety, yes, but in that second year of sobriety too, like when it's just too much or when you don't know what to do, nap. And if you can't nap, then rest. Just get horizontal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm such a big napper that when I wake up so early in the morning. I wake up at 4:30 and I'm like, oh God, it's not even five. Well, can I have a nap today? Yep. Okay. I'll
yes.
get up.
Yes, I can. Right. Mom's naps though, you guys, hold on. Cause mom will be, she'll be here and then she'll be like, oh, I think, okay, I'm going to go down and take a nap. And I'm like, okay. And then she literally comes up like 22 minutes later and she's like, oh, how long was I sleeping? I was like, literally like 7 minutes. You were just here. And she's like, really? I was, oh man, what a good nap. If I nap, I mean, well, left to my own devices, I'll nap a good 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and I'm like a bear coming out of hibernation. Like, what is happening?
Yeah,
that's
and not where a power nap. I do a power
no,
nap.
No. Yeah. But then I'll nap. I'll do like a 40, 45 minute, but I need my alarm clock, which is, it's tough.
So can we move on from this idea that in that first year, we're learning a lot about ourselves, maybe going to therapy, maybe having some thoughts of, oh, do I really want to keep going with this and all of that? A quick reminder too, that if you have thoughts like, oh, would it be nice to drink again? That doesn't mean you will drink again. That means you can acknowledge the thought and let it move on. It doesn't mean
there's not a straight line from a thought to an action. Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, please, can you think about all the thoughts you've had that you didn't act on? Okay. Yeah. Whoa.
Yes. Right. So another thing that can happen at a year is that you just quit thinking about it. Mm, you know, it yes. just now fits. And I like the saying, when the shoe fits, the foot is forgotten.
Oh, actually, this is funny because, you know, Russell, well, my feet, you guys, my feet are super high maintenance.
You have bad feet.
Because I have bunions. I have like from running, from dancing, from working on a hard marble floor at Bloomingdale's in heels.
Oh, yeah.
They're just not great feet. Okay. For everyone requesting feet pics on Instagram, you got to cool it because
somebody's requesting.
Mom, men do that all the time. Oh, there's like an OnlyFans thing for feet. And Russell's like, do it, send it to them. And then they'll be like, holy shit, never mind.
That'll cool their jets.
Yeah. God. But Russell, when he first met me, he's like, it's so interesting. You take such great care of yourself, but you always forget about your feet. He's like, it's like they're not a part of your body.
Well, you can't help the bones and the arches.
Yeah, I get pedis. So my toes, but he's like, no, you don't like care to your feet. So the idea of forgetting about feet is really funny.
This is for you. I have to say, I mentioned this quote in a group, and Jack, who we love, looked it up. And so she said who the author of it
is.
It's Zhuang Ji. So it's an Asian quote. But that idea that when we're just clicking along and things just fit, everything's good, we quit thinking. You know, we just quit thinking about it. And that, at some point, that may very well happen to us about sobriety. And I don't think about it anymore.
That's the goal.
Yes. And I think that's a critical difference between the concept or the approach that you have, which is we're going to have an abundant, sober life, and then we're going to move on. We're not versus the AA attitude of I'm going to forever sit in this meeting, call myself an alcoholic, and always be defined by
always that. Need a sponsor, always need something outside of myself, all of those things. Yeah, the goal is, this is like motherhood, you know?
Yes.
The goal is that everything that I've set up, this podcast, the cafe, the Instagram, all of these things, that the tools that I'm creating and that we're doing, the goal is that you won't need them. And you won't. You will not use this podcast as a lifeline in a year. As long as you continue to figure out what alcohol is, the role it's played in your life, and then dig into, as we always say, how you feel and what you need, which that sounds simple. it's simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
As long as you do that, you're going to listen to Murder again. You're going to listen to Bravo podcast again. Well, Mom's going to listen. Mom, you loved The Prosecutors.
I did, but I can't.
You're going to listen to audiobooks that have nothing to do with alcohol. You'll probably even be able to listen to Ellen Hildebrand's books or Emily Giffen's. I'm reading Meant to Be. The problem with the Kindle is that you never know the title because you never see the cover of the book.
See, that's why I have a real book.
But it's good for travel.
Mm-hmm.
But you will listen to all of those things. You won't need this like you do in the beginning.
Yes. And which isn't to say
You should stop listening to it.
No. But we always want to have community, no matter where we are in sobriety or anything.
Yes.
We always want to have community. And that is one of the, that has been one of the just gems of this whole experience.
It's
for
the
me
best.
Is yeah. the, yeah, our group meetings are just wonderful. And I love all those women and the ones that have been there all along and are comfortable talking and the ones that are willing to talk when this is their first meeting.
Yeah.
And everybody's vulnerability and all of it. And so I don't necessarily see people completely unplugging from that.
No. It's just, it's not the lifeline because
right.
I know it's, when I, in that first, maybe 6 months, it was like the lifeline. It was the one AirPod in all the time, no matter what. Tell me all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. I'm learning all of these things, but you need a community and a continual community throughout to help you remember what you know, right? When
yes.
in the moments that you forget, those get few and far between because it just becomes such a, it's like knit together inside of you. But yes, you will.
You always need community. Yes.
Always.
Yes. But that idea of defining that I, you know, that everything's about not drinking or how am I going to cope or all of that, that we just will move on from that and just be, this is the way I am and the way my life is and I'm doing other things.
Right. And that's actually why we created the meeting for 1 year plus that is not about alcohol, right?
Yes, that's
like,
right.
A lot of these meetings, as you get further away from alcohol, I mean, don't bring it with you, right? My whole kind of philosophy on it is like, I don't want to live my sobriety in the shadow of alcohol. And
right.
if I didn't have this podcast, if this wasn't my job, I wouldn't be talking about all this stuff. I wouldn't be talking about alcohol. I wouldn't. I would just be doing other things. And in my real life outside of work, I do other things and I don't talk about it all the time. And yeah, you won't always be so in it.
Embroiled in it, just really marinated in it or immersed in it. Yeah.
Yes.
But I do want to say, like, you know, you won't always talk about it like you do because it's your job. But I do think there is a part of us that might become an advocate, not a professional advocate, but when we're out and about. And this was one of the things that came up in a group recently is like being really excited to say it. To people that are outside of our group or maybe even outside of our families or sometimes in our families, mm-hmm. but to be able to proselytize a little bit, to say, I can't tell you how great it is not to drink. I'm just loving not drinking.
Yeah. And maybe if that's your personality. But if you hear that and you say, oh my God, that's so not me. Like I can think of a few women who would never do that, right? Just
right.
because that's just not
who
they are.
It's not a requirement.
No. And it doesn't, if you don't want to do that, doesn't mean you're not there yet or doing something wrong or something. Then that's just like, no, it's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think somebody was talking about that in the group last night, that as they get more comfortable being able to put it out there, it's sort of fun to do that.
Totally. Well, I think it is. That's always where it feels sticky too, right? When it starts to feel like, oh, I think I want to say more, but I'm just scared. Then say more. If you want to say more, don't wait till you're not scared, right? Say more. Yeah, and I think probably the other thing that can happen in the second year of sobriety is boredom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is you're like, okay, maybe you did a lot of the excavating and you're like, okay. Yeah. Now what? Is this what it is? And, we love to talk about boredom because what is that? What is that an opportunity for? You know, I always say we let our kids get bored for a reason. And what happens when our kids get bored? They get super creative and they find out what they like to do. And it's the same thing. If you've been drinking for so long for your entire adult life, you might not know what you like to do. And drinking a drink is not an activity.
Right. It's the screeching breaks to activity.
Yes, and creativity and all of the good things. It's not, it's not something you do. Like, could you imagine? Isn't it so funny that like drinking a drink, like what do you want to do? Like if I just like invite four girlfriends over tonight and I'm like, I don't know, we'll just like drink some water. And they'll be like, like, what are we going to do? Like, that's not an activity. Like,
But don't you remember when you were young? Yes. Like, oh, let's go out drinking tonight. Let's go out drinking.
The fact that it's an activity, not even when you're young, like now. You know, like, what do you want to do? Drink wine. Like, that's not – drinking something is not an activity.
Yeah, right.
It's just not. And you don't realize that, though, until you're in sobriety and you're like, oh, actually, like, walking to get coffee with somebody is an activity. Although drinking coffee is an activity. So.
It's like my favorite activity. It's so – interesting that you and I didn't talk ahead of time about how we were going to, like what our thoughts were on this. But it's so interesting that the last thing I had down thinking about what I would want to talk about is this very thing. Discovering a new you, new interests, new dimensions of yourself, new, just a whole new way to be in the world.
Yeah.
And jumping off from that, okay, I'm not going to do the drinking thing anymore. So now what?
Right.
And that, wow, within that now what, there's just a world full of options.
And I like the idea of turning the now what into why not now, right?
Oh, yeah. That's
like,
good.
Like, why not now?
Yeah.
Like, if you're thinking of like, oh, I've always wanted to do this, or I've always wanted to try this, or I want, okay, like, why not now?
Yes. Yeah. Now you've opened up time and money, usually.
Yes.
Right? You're not spending a ton of money on
expensive
wine or whatever. And yeah, and that, coming home from work and sitting down and having a couple beers, that was really the ugliest part of my drinking, was thinking when I went off to work in the morning, like, when I come home tonight, I'm going to play the piano, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then I would come home and I would crack a beer, sit down, and I'd watch politics until I went to bed and have a couple of beers. Or I'd watch an episode of something. I mean, it was such a waste of time and life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, what am I going to do in the evening?
I know.
Such a great question.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so exciting. And boredom, make friends with that, because there's nothing wrong with being bored.
Right.
Being bored can lead to so many good things, but generally we have to get to that boredom state to think, oh, okay, what do I want to do? How great is that?
Yeah. It ushers in all kinds of possibilities.
Yes. Okay. Well, come and join us. You guys, we do this all the time in the cafe. Mom has her meetings. You have three now. Do you have three?
I do. I have Sunday at 9 a.m. These are all central. Sunday at 9 a.m., Tuesday at 1 p.m., which is the year plus people,
and
then Wednesday nights at 7. So, yeah. And you have two.
Yeah, I have Tuesday at 11 and Friday at 11. And Audrey has some meetings. Jen has some meetings. It's just, we're just rocking and rolling over in the cafe. Mm-hmm. All of the info is in the show notes. We have the other tier. If the cafe feels like too much for you, maybe, and you don't need that level of support anymore, we have the Sober Mom Life community for $5.95 a month. And you still get the Tuesday meeting, you get the monthly book club, but you get that chat and the feed, which is like Facebook, but better. And you get to connect with sober curious women and moms who are doing the same thing you're doing. And got to say, they're the most badass women on the internet. So totally. Come and join us. And Mom, when this airs, we will have gotten home from our retreat.
Oh, gosh, it was so good.
Wasn't it amazing? I mean,
it was just amazing.
What was your favorite part?
Meeting people at IRL. That was my favorite part.
Me too. All the hugs. That was my favorite.
Real hugs.
All the hugs. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Thanks, Mom.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for getting me all hooked up here.
Man, that was tough.
It was so ugly.
That was tough. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.